Welcome to the Open Adoption Project. This is episode 111. We're the Nelsons. I'm Lynette.
And I'm Sean. And we're happy to be back in your podcast feed. It's been a busy and sick and a lot of other things a couple weeks here. I believe it was the day after we last recorded. I had surgery on my nose. I didn't get a nose job. it doesn't look different on the outside, had a deviated septum fixed and healed from that great. And then I got sick along with one of my kids. And then we passed it along to the rest of the family.
Yeah, kind of cycled through. And yeah, we're in a busy season, but things are good. It's just been hard to stay on top of things with the podcast.
Yep.
But we promised in our last episode that we would talk about improving family communication patterns. And so we wanted to make sure to hop in to your feed and talk about that just a bit today before we have some other really fun episodes come out. Next week, we will be having a really exciting episode. I'm so excited about this one. I have been for so long. We'll be talking about establishing psychological safety with Dr. Jeff Thompson. He was one of both Sean's and my professors in the MPA program that we were in. And he's so great. I feel like this topic is so relevant for adopted families and people connected to the adoption community. It's
just phenomenal. It was fun to chat with him. He has so many great insights about just connection and relationships and
listening.
Communication. There was just a really good conversation. So we're looking forward to sharing that with you. And then throughout the rest of the year, I think we've already have almost all of our episodes pre-recorded.
Yeah, so hopefully we won't fall off like we did with this one. Whoops.
But do you want to give kind of a preview of some of the other conversations that we'll look at over the next couple of months?
Yeah. So last November, we kind of went overboard with our National Adoption Month plans. We wanted to do something really special and we had a lot of episodes. This year, we had to step back and make it a little more simple, but I'm excited. We're doing a kind of book club for National Adoption Month, where we'll have episodes where we're talking with adoptees about different books that are connected to adoption, right? Like we'll be talking with adoptees about books like Far From the Tree, The Girls Who Went Away, The Orphan Train. And we're really looking forward to hearing from some of these people and learning about some of these books. So if you want to put any of those books on your library queue and start reading them now.
As I started editing some of those already, I love that we talk with adoptees mm-hmm. about these topics that revolve around part of who they are.
Yeah.
And for us who weren't adopted and, you know, friends and family who might not understand that perspective as much, it's really insightful to hear their point of view. So
yeah.
I'm really looking forward to releasing a lot of those conversations.
Yeah, I'm excited about that. And then our last episode of the year will be a trilogy discussion is what we're calling it. It's where we speak with an adoptive mother, a biological mother, and an adoptee all in one
family,
right? And so that was a really fun one to record as well. And so that's how we'll round out our year. And then we have a few things planned for next year too. So we're excited today to talk about family communication patterns some more though. First, let's start off and maybe refresh a little for those who might not have caught the last episode. It would make more sense if you did catch it, but that's okay. We'll lay some ground.
Yeah, help us just maybe Cliff Notes version.
Okay. So family communication patterns, basically they help us understand how childhood family structures impact adulthood and life. So there's two different elements of family communication patterns. We're looking at two different orientations is what they're called. Conformity orientation and conversation orientation. And so how these impact communication within families.
Okay, so conformity, remind us what that is.
Yeah, so conformity can range from low to high. And it's basically like how much, I'll just give you a few examples. This will be quicker. So an example of a measure of the conformity orientation on the revised family communication patterns measure, it's from Ritchie and Fitzpatrick in 1990, is my parents usually have the last word in our family. Another example would be, I'm expected to obey my parents' rules when I'm at home.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. And it's basically the vibe of like, my parents are right, or my parents are in charge.
Yeah, and like, I know that I think we referred to this one before, but like you'll know better when you're older is kind of a sentiment.
Yeah, so the high conformity is going to look at conforming with your parents. There's an expectation that you're going to conform in the family. And these patterns are generally laid by parents, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then high conversation orientation is just a totally different thing, right? So I wouldn't think about these as connected as much as like two parts of a whole, right?
Okay.
So conversation orientation is how open a conversation is within a family. Research is really clear in showing that more conversation means better adjustment, better relationships, higher life satisfaction. So a couple of examples from that scale from Ritchie and Fitzpatrick. My family members often talk about our feelings and emotions. Or my parents encourage me to express my feelings.
Yeah. So yeah. When we talked about this in the previous episode, We talked a lot more about like the communicative openness in an adoptive home, right?
Yeah, I feel like there's a lot of overlap there, and I don't have anything to support that. But logically, for me, it feels like there's a good amount of overlap because they're both about communication within the home.
And we've talked to a lot of adoptees that fall on that spectrum, right? Where some grew up in a home where they had one, maybe two conversations about the fact that a child was adopted.
Mm-hmm. It was kind of a taboo subject.
Yeah, and their whole, you know, adolescence or growing up. Mm-hmm. And others where it was just very free-flowing conversation. And so there's this spectrum.
Yeah. Yeah, and so there's four main categories that families will generally fall into, right? We've got protective families where there's low conversation and high conformity. And there's also laissez-faire, where there's low conversation and low conformity, consensual, which is high conversation, high conformity, and pluralistic, high conversation, low conformity, right? We talked in our last episode about how we know conversation is important. It's like we need to be seeking to have high conversation orientation, hands down. It's a little more ambiguous knowing on conformity orientation. With adoption, I think it's a bit of a tightrope, right? Because you want your child to feel like your family is like this inclusive place that they belong, but you also want them to feel like they belong however they are, right? Like they don't have to conform, but they're also like this cohesive part of both of their families, right? Their birth family and their adoptive family.
Yeah, and you could see how some who are trying to foster a really good family culture, mm-hmm. who create a lot of identity around their family, may verge on being really high conformity in an effort to help that family culture feel one.
And
but the flip side, right? It's a spectrum. If we're too far on the other side and we are
like too pluralistic,
like anything goes, like be, and I don't want to say these like they're a bad thing, but like be who you want to be and do what you want to do, and you're your own unique individual person, like somewhere in that they may, adopted children, at least in my opinion, may feel less connection. So I feel like there's like a pendulum in the adoptive families.
And it probably changes throughout development.
For sure.
I imagine, there's probably different needs developmentally during early childhood, middle childhood, adolescence, right? It probably evolves what kind of conformity is healthy, which is challenging because these patterns are generally like a set thing.
Yeah.
And so, something to be really aware of and attuned to. And how do we change a family communication pattern? I have been researching this and basically all I have found is like therapy, right? We can change these by going to professionals and getting some help. But I feel like families do evolve and communication patterns within families do evolve. And so I think this is something very doable. It's just maybe a little bit more of an abstract conversation that we're going to be focusing on today. So last time we talked a lot about how families might not fall firmly into one category, right? Like, I feel like our family is somewhere on the line between pluralistic and what is the other one? Consensual, right? I think we're somewhere between there. Like Sean and I both took this quiz that I think we included in the show notes about where our family would fall. And I think for me, I was like, we were both high on conversation, but in conformity, I was like on the border of pluralistic, like right between being in pluralistic and consensual, but I was pluralistic. And then Sean was consensual, just barely by one, right? And so I think a lot of families probably fall kind of in both camps, right? Like they can be, and maybe different days and different circumstances can just bring out different aspects of family communication patterns for us. So last time, Sean, I remember you were talking about how your family growing up, you thought we were probably lower on the conversation end of the spectrum. And then conformity, what do you think that depended on? What shaped how conformity was in your family?
Yeah, so, I mean, trying to remember really specific things, especially for me, is challenging from my childhood. But I would say that we had a lot of conformity in our home. Like there were rules and unspoken rules that were expected to be met. And we didn't really talk about much. For example, I mean, so one example of something that was really high conformity was my sister and I had to get like perfect grades in school. And that was it. Later that I find out it was because of my dad's personal educational experiences that we weren't aware of, and that he wanted better for us than he had experienced. But we never talked about that, like in the moment, right?
Yeah.
But this was the law, you follow the law, and that's just what we do as a family. But there wasn't really the conversation about that.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I feel like my family was probably on the lower end of conversation as well, maybe closer to the middle, but probably lower. And then with conformity, I feel like it depended, right? If we were talking about religiosity and like church, then it was a high conformity family, right? There was not any room to disagree with my parents religiously. But other things like grade school, how we dressed, I don't feel like that mattered as much. And so there was more pluralistic family communication patterns there. And so I don't know if other families are like that, where it might kind of vary depending on what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Interesting though. And so as I've been studying about how we can help our families become better connected, I keep coming back to what's called family systems theory. I learned about it in school a few months ago, and it is really interesting. So basically, family systems theory focuses on how families and family members interact with each other and their environment. And it's like a system, right? This was developed by Dr. Murray Bowen in the 50s. And it's the idea that families are these complex systems. Every member has a role and a purpose, and what one person does is going to impact the whole family, right? Yeah. It's like a system, like think of lots of cogs.
We can't all exist independently without influencing the other people that are living in the same home or in the same family.
Yeah, and so following a lot of the principles of healthy family systems, I think can improve our family communication patterns. So a few of those would be being connected, right? Having communication, open communication.
Talked about this a lot.
Yeah, always a good thing.
Another one is support, right?
Yeah.
And that's in a lot of different ways, but showing love and showing care, helping each other and supporting each other is really important for connectedness.
Yeah. Another one is security. Healthy families provide a sense of security and belonging. And so I feel like that helps us kind of put in perspective how conformity might look as well, right? We're trying to find that balance.
Well, and I think about all three of those things, communication, support, and security, how they all are intertwined as well, right? Like if I feel support,
You'll feel secure.
Yeah. And then I can communicate, right?
I love that. Yeah.
They all build on one another. So if we're striving for connectedness in our home, those principles are really important, that we strive to have clear, open communication, that we support one another by loving and caring for each other, and that we help our children, help each other feel a sense of security and belonging.
I love that. Yeah. Another important aspect of healthy family systems would be transparency. That would involve being respectful to each other and to others' boundaries, privacy, opinions. It involves expectations. Families that are healthy set clear and consistent expectations and rules. There's mutual respect. And then additionally, there'd be a healthy kind of conflict management. Instead of like gaslighting or ignoring someone when you're mad at them and not speaking to them for however long, you address conflict in a healthy way.
So transparency, we're respectful, we set clear expectations, and we have good conflict management skills.
Yeah, exactly. All right. And then additionally, we want to be flexible. So healthy family systems, there's got to be some grace and some forgiveness and also an element of playfulness. Families shouldn't just be these rigid systems like a work system, right? It's such an essential part of who people are. Families need to have some of that.
Yeah, I think just kind of building on what you said for flexibility, right? The sense of grace or forgiveness in a home. I think for me, I'm pretty stubborn in some ways, but I think for me, one really important thing that I do, and I feel like is a really important experience to have, is when I've messed up, when I've got frustrated at one of our kids or when I've yelled or something like that, that I take them and sit down with them and, you know, talk to them and to like admit that, you know, hey, the way I handled this is not the way that I want to be a dad. Mm-hmm. And like I'm not perfect. Yeah. And just helping them see too, like, hey, you know what? This is the first time I've ever had to be a dad to an 11-year-old boy, right? Mm-hmm. Or this is the first time I've had to be a dad to a 14-year-old girl. And I'm learning how to be that type of dad. And I'm making mistakes as I go. But if you can forgive me, and I'm going to forgive you for making mistakes, because I know this is the first time you've been an 11-year-old boy, or the first time you've been a 14-year-old girl, right? Or whatever it is in our family, right? Those conversations are really important.
Yeah, I love that, because I feel like that is a shift generationally. I love this shift where, as parents, it's not a taboo or like a sign of weakness to admit our imperfections and to try to be open with our kids about, hey, I messed up. I hope you can forgive me. I'm going to try to do better. Because, yeah, I don't feel like I saw that growing up. I mean, not just with my parents, but like with anyone I knew. I'm sure there were some families, but yeah, it's just been a cultural shift. I love it so much. I think it helps build those healthy connections.
Well, and going back to like when we were talking about conformity, right? One of the feelings or one of the statements that someone might say in a really high conformity environment is that, you know, my parents know everything. My parents are not wrong. And so taking time to seek forgiveness, ask for some grace, be truthful and transparent and honest in the way that you're talking about how you're parenting, that improves your communication. That's going to help them in their security. They're going to feel more security. I think they'll feel a little bit more respect toward you as a parent as well. Yeah. And it kind of sets the expectation for them to be open and talk about the mistakes that they make. Yeah. And if we can come to this place where we're all open talking about things, it's going to help so much of our family.
I love that. Yeah. So beyond family systems theory, we also have a list of a few other ways that we feel like we can improve family connections and family communication patterns. So first off, active listening.
Yeah.
We'll be talking about that so much next week.
We'll talk about that in the next episode. So I wonder if we just...
I can skip over that. Yeah. But yeah, it's an important one though.
Yeah. You'll hear us refer to level one and level two listening. Mm-hmm. That's
a great little plug.
That's your hook to listen to the next episode.
All right. Also, we want to create family rituals. Bonding rituals can help strengthen family relationships. They also help with family resiliency and emotional health.
Yeah. What would you say are some of our family rituals?
For me, I think of like traditions, right? Like Halloween, we decorate sugar cookies. That's like something we do every Halloween. It reminds me of my grandma. Christmas, our family always goes to the Festival of Lights. The kids love this opportunity. It's like a little drive-through park with Christmas lights and decorations, and the kids love it because they can unbuckle and like stand up with their heads out the sunroof. And yeah, it's just like a nice, sweet tradition. And then we always have milkshakes afterwards.
Yeah, I think of birthdays in our home. This is actually the eve of a birthday at the time of a recording. We always decorate the house kind of similarly, like with streamers in our
kitchen. But we always do it after the kids are in bed, which is funny if they get older. I don't know if we need to do that, yeah. But It's a ritual and they love it. We've talked about stopping with our older kids and they're like, no.
But yeah, the way the streamers and balloons and gifts are put out, it like matches every year. And it just feels like, yeah, this is a ritual in our family.
That's true. I love that one.
What about any more like meaningful or deep rituals?
I mean, the next one I was thinking of might not be meaningful and deep, but we like traveling together. I do think we've made a lot of memories just like sitting in the car, driving on long road trips and talking after reading. We like to do audiobooks and talking about after a really sad audiobook. I think last trip we read The Watsons Go to Birmingham.
Because we went to Birmingham.
Yeah, we're so clever right now. But we talked about racism and we talked about some of these challenging aspects and had really good conversations with our kids about how racism has existed, how it persists and continues to exist, how we can combat that. So yeah, I feel like family rituals can be such a huge thing. And there's a lot of things we probably don't realize that are family rituals, right?
Well, I think I just thought of another one. And this is very ritualistic. And I think it stemmed from like bedtime routine, but for each of our kids, we have a different song that we sing to them at night when we're like tucking everybody in. Mm-hmm. And even our older kids, like 9, 11, and 13, 14, they still want us to sing their songs.
Yep.
So they're still not too cool for that. But
I imagine we'll get there, but
at some point.
But it's really sweet. Yeah, that's a
part of our family culture.
Yeah, and this next one I feel like is similar to a ritual: eating meals together. Right?
Yeah.
We hear this all the time. There are so many studies that show that eating meals together can help reinforce family communication. And so, even if you can't do it every night, choose nights when you can, and just try to focus on being together without screens and electronics around the table.
Yeah, and asking questions that help them reflect on experiences they've had, whether it's that day. It's kind of funny right now, our youngest right now, every time I ask him, what did you learn at school? And he said, I don't know, but I had fun. Every
it's
day.
It's okay. He's four.
He's four. It's great. It was preschool. It's great. But but we strive to eat dinner together every day.
And that's probably going to change as our kids keep getting older. I feel like we're kind of in this naive state right now, right before our kids are like getting super busy with stuff. And but yeah, we are in this stage right now where we're able to do that every day. We have a lot of scheduled family time too, which is another thing we thought of for our list.
Yeah.
Scheduled family time. On Friday nights, we have family fun night. And our plan has always been to let the kids start inviting friends over when they want to for that. But so far they haven't wanted to. It's been like a special family night.
Homemade pizza.
Yeah, we try to have a dinner that's like more fun. Try to get the kids to eat salmon or asparagus on Friday nights.
Pizza.
Yeah. But yeah, we'll do games, movies, treats. It's a fun night. I look forward to Friday nights too, actually. Yeah.
Another thing we thought about is to make sure that we allow one-on-one time. Mm-hmm. Daddy-daughter dates, mom and son dates, those type of things.
Mom-daughter, yeah. Get some one-on-one time with each of our kids. And then also making sure that if there's a situation that arises or a problem or a challenge, instead of attacking each other, we address the problem, right?
Yeah.
Making sure that we always remember that this relationship, that our family relationships are
more important,
of the utmost importance.
Well, it makes me think of the one-on-one time. So one of our sons right now is going to run a half marathon next week, which makes
That's amazing.
Runner dad really happy. and we've been training together. And I mean, I've spent a lot of one-on-one time with him over the last many, many weeks, even months. And sometimes we go on a run and we have really meaningless conversation, but we're together. And sometimes we have really deep conversations. I guess it kind of depends on how fast we're running and how much we want to talk. Mm-hmm. But that has helped us work through a lot of problems too. Mm-hmm. And something about the, you know, going on a walk or running together with this forward motion, like mirroring progression in a relationship has been really, really good.
Well, look at you. That's very poetic. I love it. All right. And yeah, just again, along with making sure that we're addressing situations and problems in a healthy way, seeking to be assertive, but not aggressive and confrontational. All right. So we created a little exercise that we thought would help families evaluate their communication patterns and work on improving them.
Awesome.
So there's three steps to this exercise. Okay. So first, with your partner, you determine which family communication pattern you think you most align with in your family. And so as you do that, you want to talk about what the strengths and weaknesses are of where you are currently.
So you're talking about?
Like, are you a laissez-faire family? Are you a pluralistic or a consensual or a protective family? All right, so evaluate that together. And then you want to discuss which combination of conversation and conformity your kids probably need, right? Like, look at it more from what do you think would be appropriate for your child or your children, thinking about their ages, their needs, and think like, are we in a spot where we are meeting our kids' needs with our current family communication pattern?
Yeah.
Okay. And then finally, with your partner and if your kids, if they're old enough and it's an age appropriate thing for them, plan time for family interactions and take steps to find and strike the right balance of conversation and conformity in your home.
Yeah. I think for me, this activity just helps us be more intentional about what we're doing. Mm-hmm. I think it's easy to get into kind of a rut or almost complacent, like this is just how we've done things for so long mm-hmm. that we're not really intentional about how we're doing things. And so just looking at this, the level of conformity, the level of communication in our home, taking a step back and saying, hey, are we really where we want to be? And we're probably not going to be exactly where we want to be. So let's make a plan mm-hmm. Moving forward. And I think it's really important to make sure as part of that plan that we set periods of time where we come back to it and reflect on our progress or reflect on our change.
Not like a one-time exercise, yeah. Right? Like this is something that I think would be really healthy to repeat.
Yeah, like to basis. Add a level of accountability
yeah.
in that process of making a plan.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, and I don't want this to feel like a chore, right? Where it's like, oh, my family is so messed up and I have so much to do, because all of us have families where there's room for improvement.
Absolutely.
There's so many like beautiful family relationships. And just because you're not in a perfect family because you're a human it doesn't take away from that beauty. And so I feel like just remembering like there are so many good things already, but just trying to enhance that in a child focused way where you're trying to think of how you can better meet your child's needs.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for sharing a little bit about what you've been learning in your PhD program. It's been really fun for me because I know you have hours and hours of research that you're doing along with classes, and it's not easy to communicate or share even in our day-to-day, like all the things that you're learning.
Even so, as I talk about how important communication is, it's true. It's a double-edged sword. It's really tricky.
Well, you communicate about things that are really important with our family and those things.
Not always, but thank you.
But yeah, we hope that this episode has helped you think about the way that your family structure is kind of functioning right now. Thinking about different ways that you can improve relationships and connection with others in your family, and take some initiative to act in ways that could improve communication and overall just satisfaction in your family situation.
Awesome. Yeah. Thanks so much for listening to this episode and for being here with us on the podcast.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Open Adoption Project.